Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Jenny Wren. I've been a festival booker for over 15 years, mom of two, four if you count the dogs. I've buried my sister and my parents, partied like it was 1999 for over 20 years, modeled for 5 minutes, worn far too many accessories and not enough self-care. I've had breast cancer and epiphanies. Safe to say, she's been around. You're listening to Hindsight Conversations, where my guests are invited to bring to the table what it is they want to discuss, feel ready to share from where they are in their lives. We meet it together with no agenda. No topic is off limits, from the frivolous to the profound, the gnarly to the joyful, painful to the practical. Red flag moments you can only see when looking back, but looking back to move forward. Join me weekly where we explore the 2020 vision of hindsight. Everyone has it. How are you?
I'm good. I'm kind of making decisions, big decisions that I've been putting off, like getting out of the fucking industry. Took me like a month to actually decide to do it. And then now I'm doing it, you know, whereby I signed and said, no, I don't do that stuff anymore. You know, I'm struggling for money. Do you know what I mean? But it's just not for me anymore. You know, so that was a big thing. I think especially the last year has been coming to terms with Jesus Christ, this is actually who I am. This is a part. This is how big the role this plays in me, you know, which is kind of one of the reasons to come back on. Like when I listen back to the interview, and I have done it a few times, I'm kind of like, that's a lot of symptoms. That's a lot of, you know, where I'm at. Mm-hmm. One thing about the causation, you know, which is what I've been doing for the last year, you know what I mean? With a trauma program. You know, I did EMDR, I've done all these different things, and I've also sat with myself and said, how does this play out in my life? How does it manifest? You know, and it's in a million different ways that I didn't know or chose not to know, you know, and all that work has kind of brought me to where I am now. I'm probably in a stronger place. I wouldn't say a better place, but I'm able to talk about stuff and go, actually, that was that. Mm-hmm. That was that, and actually, no, that belongs in that pile, not in that pile, you know. Whereas before it was all it's just mental health, it's just that's just, you know, stuff. So it's kind of like the interview got in my craw that we did on my personal craw myself. I was kind of like, kind of felt like a half truth, and I felt like I'd done myself a disservice, and I felt like I'd done with the wider outside of me, the circuit, a bit of a disservice in terms of. It didn't advance anywhere to where I was now. I don't know if that makes sense to you. It was kind of like, actually, there's this whole chunk of stuff that I don't talk about, or I haven't talked about. And actually, that's the real stuff. That's, you know, that's where I should be going with it. Mm-hmm. You know that way? Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, of course, I'll come back with you that we can only sometimes go so far, you know, and that's... you know, maybe that's as far as you were ready to go in that moment.
Yeah, it wasn't though. That's what gets in my craw, because I can listen to myself and I listen to myself saying things and I'm like, you danced around a bit. Not a lie, but it was kind of, I was like, God, that's just what you've been telling people for years. Do you know that way? That's you, protecting myself to a certain extent. But I'm not in a place where I need to protect myself anymore. You know that way. And so I felt like it was a bit of a half truth, and it was a bit of a dodge.
I mean, I certainly didn't hear a dodge, nor I'm sure did anyone else. So don't be hard on yourself. It's perfectly on brand also to go, well, in hindsight.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what it was. And I was like, actually, you know, it's not easy to sit down and just say it to myself or say it just randomly. Do you know what I mean? I've always been someone that, well, if I'm asked or challenged, I go, oh, this because of this, it's because of this. And I can frame it easier, you know, the words easier, rather than just sit down and do my own thing and go, hey, I'm Rowan and this is this, you know, that way. So I suppose it was the perfect opportunity. It was like, I could actually go hindsight to hindsight. Hindsight on my hindsight, double hindsight.
If you feel now you're in a place where you would like to, I won't say go deeper, but potentially reveal more,
I think as well, I listened to it as someone who would be listening to it in my position or in the same position. Mm-hmm. And I felt, God, you know, that doesn't really explain much. Do you know what I mean? Especially because I had it in the intro, various things that I didn't even address, you know, that way. So it was kind of, for me, it's definitely therapeutic for me to talk about this stuff openly. I mean, I've done a lot of work, you know, with psychologists. I was in hospital, you know, I did a trauma program. And it brings you so far in acceptance for yourself, you know. And then I think the next step is to kind of go, well, actually, this is me wanting to be heard. This is me telling my story from a better place, you know. And it's not by way of apology, and it's not by way of excuse or being hard on myself. Mm. It's simply, I think, that, you know, through the cow shed and even that first interview, I do have a voice, you know, and I, you know, it's to be heard and to let other people know that they can be heard.
And you have support. You have a trauma program running at the moment, or?
Oh, so it's finished now. Okay. I did 6 months of a trauma program, which is group work and individual work. And that was with St. Patrick's. Absolutely amazing. You know, absolutely amazing. Brilliant. You know, I mean, I only really came out with my abuse, you know, with publicly or to family and friends like a year ago, you know, and that was after 20 years of very bad mental health, addiction, you know, toxic relationships, I'm not a person who sits here and goes, well, that's what caused that. And so I'm not responsible to blame for anything like that. You know what I mean? I spoke before about my mismanagement, you know, but to come public with it, or to come even to my family and friends who wouldn't have known, you know, my parents, who would have had an inkling, but not really known, you know, and it's been so far back. I mean, this abuse happened between the ages of 8 and 11 in school, you know, so it was a good while ago. And then learning at how, through this trauma program and through doing individual work with my doctor, a psychiatrist for a couple of years, you know, and a different psychologist, it's not even the instances of abuse. It's how malignant and hidden it manifests itself in your life. Mm. You know, I suppose that's the hindsight I wanted to bring to this. You know, this was kind of like, you know, the connections that I've learned between what abuse on that scale does and how it manifests itself, you know, because it's crazy, you know. It comes in into every day, into every single day, you know, in many, many different ways.
And how would you like to discuss that now? What is it that, where, you know, do you, are you, would you like to talk about the malignancies, do you want to go back to age 8?
I suppose it'd be what would someone who knows nothing about it want to know, you know, I'll go through what happened. First of all, I was eight when I was first abused. I suppose you could call it being groomed by an older guy who lived in our neighbourhood. And I really looked up to him, and he was an older person. He was really well respected, probably about 5 or 6 years older than me. And I suppose I was groomed into doing stuff with him, you know. And he was cool, and I was suddenly hanging around with the big guys. Do you know that way? And even at eight, you don't really, you know it's kind of wrong, you know, but because it's so secretive, there's no real shame involved, because it's just, you know, it's terrible to say. And you fall into this, what I fell into was it, you have, you know, your fight, freeze, flight, and as the Ford's not talking about how to form, you know, whereby you go along because it's easier to go along, you know, or there's some kind of reward in terms of like hanging out with an older person or being taught you were cool. And I was always a very, very kind of shy, not shy. I was always outgoing, but it was because of low self-esteem. I've always had quite low self-esteem. So I suppose suddenly to be getting attention, you know, regardless of what it was, you know, at the time led to me going along with it. And then that carried that kind of. I was really, really small. You know, I'm quite tall. Like I'm 6'3" now, but until 50, I was under 5 foot. You know, I was a tiny, tiny boy. So most people were bigger than me. You know that way. So I'd always be like kind of outgoing or gregarious or fooling around. You know, I was always getting in trouble in class for not bad, but just blah blah blah. Just being a loudmouth and a commenter, and you know. My first year, it would have been sixth class into first year I was in the school. The people involved, one of them was actually in prison now. It was found out, you know, there's a lot of papers that he was an abuser on a huge wide scale from the 70s right up. You know, this guy was like a predator, but he was a rugby coach. And again, I don't know what marked me out for it, but this guy started abusing me as well, quite violently, you know, fellating and stuff like that, really just violent. An angry, angry, angry person. That was, by that stage, I'd kind of gotten into this pattern of something's going to happen, possibly today, possibly in school, more likely in school. So as soon as it's over, I know it's done for the day, you know. So there was like a year of that, and then another person got involved in this. And so there's this other, you know, there was a priest who was, he was quite high up I went to school with a priestly order that ran it. So between the two of them, school, my first year, sixth class to third year, became kind of a daily kind of getting up at 8 in the morning, not knowing when the knock's going to come on the classroom door or you're going to be called in. You know, and I suppose in many ways, that's what caused the real trauma, as opposed to the actual incidents, you know. And I mean, all the individual incidents I've gone through, and it's with my psychologist, and, you know, some of them, you kind of, if you were to put them on a scale of what they were, you'd go, my God, that must have been the most terrifying. But no, you'll find something way down what the scale of people would. You know, physical abuse was actually worse because of the terror involved, or that was a particular day where I thought I'd gotten away with it, you know, with getting out of school. So, I mean, that's where the real trauma manifests itself in they call it hypervigilance, where you are constantly hyper, hyper aware of yourself, your surroundings, what you're going to do, when you're going to do it. You know, and your control leaves from that, where you kind of become carefree and just whatever. You know, once you're out of it and you think you're safe, you're not sure when the next thing is going to come. So those moments become almost more fitful. Like that's certainly where more addiction kicked in later on in life. You know, I would have started using drugs quite early in life, like 11 or 12. You know, just because. I'd been taken out of the school in third year, so I knew it was potentially over with them, but it could happen again. This could happen again. You know, I was bullied in the school I went to because I was small, but again, you never lose a certain a certain elevation of fear threshold mm-hmm. where you're at. Do you know that way where you're constantly presuming something's going to go wrong? And it often, in many ways, it's easier to manifest that yourself and get it done.
Oh, yeah.
Then wait for it, waiting. You know. And I mean, I would see that through all, like even to nowadays, you know. Well, not so much the last year where I kind of pulled myself back, but it is another manifestation. I'll pull myself back from people rather than think, I'm going to hurt them or I'm going to damage them or they're going to hurt me. You know, it's easier to be alone and shit to be alone. I'm not a lone person. I'm loud. I love people. I love going out. You know what I mean? I love engaging and stuff. But I did for years and years and years, you know, either through, I became very, you know, dependent on cocaine for a long, long time because it switched that off. Mm-hmm. It switched that off. And so I grew into situations where I had no fear. I had no worries. You know, it was just this, I could not be myself, but I could not be that person who was worried about whether someone was talking to me about me in a room. You know, I'd see someone go into a room and just people talking in a different room. But I'd be like, oh God, are they talking about me? Not in a paranoid way, but in a, have I done something stupid or wrong? You know, I spent a long time thinking I'm stupid and wrong. And that negative self-critical voice was very, very, very strong in me for a long time. To the point where I would, you know, as I said, I'm going to manifest a disaster here. To bring this to a boiling point with this person, you know.
Just to rip the Band-Aid off, just to get the thing done, that kind of
exploded. It was like
exploded.
Something bad's going to happen in this relationship. I may as well...
Just explode it, yeah.
Do it now, yeah, yeah. You know, I you know... Which is terrible, because you do hurt. You know, I don't beat myself up as much as I used to about it now, you know. But I can look back and I can see destroyed friendships. You know, for many years, I got into kind of lying as well, you know, telling mistruths, trying to create a reality I knew wasn't sustainable so that it would come to an end. And then I'd be like, well, there you go. That's you. You know, that's what you do. You're right. You're right there. You have that control of things not being in control.
I mean, this is they're very young years, very tender years.
Yeah.
You know, they really are. Did you feel voiceless? Did you feel like you couldn't come home and tell anyone? Did you feel you wouldn't be
It's a funny thing with abuse. And I'm only, again, like a lot of this stuff I've only learned this year. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Where I've, not to dodge your question, I'll come back to it, but where my, you know, people professionally have sat down and go, what you're doing there is because of this, the way you're saying that because of this, you did that because of this, you know. But with that scale of abuse where it's kind of consistent, drawn out over a number of years, and because it was different people, I came to the conclusion it was me. It's something in me. It's something I'm doing wrong or doing right, or this is the way it is. I know this is shit, but this keeps happening, you know. So, and as well, because it was people in authority or people with power, you know, you're told if you tell anyone this, everyone will think you're gay. If you tell anyone this, I'm the principal. You can't. You think you can? You can't get away with this. You know, no one's going to believe you. Why would they believe you? You know, you're small. You're doing shit in school. You know, because obviously my grades were slipping. You know, my personal and school life is kind of falling apart. You know, not that anyone would have known, but it's not so much you don't feel you're believed. It's your programmed that you are.
Yeah.
You're nothing. You're this is where you are. You know, why should this is happening to you for a reason? Because you're a not so much. I never thought I was a bad person, but you get to the stage where you think, well, I deserve this somehow because this is what happens to you. You know, which is when you're 8, 9, 10, 11, they're pretty formative years, and you're trying to fit into secondary school. And I was small as it was, you know, and my grades were slipping. So, you know, by all accounts, you know, well, Rowan doesn't pay attention enough with class. You know, anyone else looking in is going, well, he's just a fucking messer. You can't pay attention in class, you know. And that compounds then over a while where you go, well, I'm not going to be believed here. Or, you know, plus the simple shame of being a person who's been sexually abused, you're like, I'm not telling anyone this. You know, I'm not telling anyone this. You know.
Gosh, it's massive, Rowan. It's massive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that continues to this day. Mm. You know, in a smaller way, where if something's going wrong or if I haven't managed to do something, I won't do anything about it. I'll keep it to myself. You know, the way, and usually it kind of snowballs until I'm going to go, please deal with this now, and I'll deal with it, you know, or I'll reach out and go, look, this has actually happened. And I'm going to go, this is so simply fixed. Mm. Why did you get to here? You know,
it's
that
a
way.
Habit. It's become a total habit of that.
At the time, it's a coping mechanism, and it works. All coping mechanisms work for the while. I mean, you talk to anyone, you know, an alcoholic or any drug addict or anyone who engages in any kind of harmful coping mechanism, they'll say, well, it got me through for a little while, you know, but because you're never really addressing the problem, it's never really going to, you know, it's just your coping mechanism escalates to something that suddenly doesn't work anymore, you know.
So drug use started really young, probably alcohol as well, because that's just part of our...
Yeah. I mean, it used to be, I would need something to go to school. Wow. You know, I'm getting stuck in hash. You know what I mean? Or, you know, something small, really. You know, I never drank really going before I went to school, but there was always, I mean, that was, you know, the worst times for me were kind of like from either 8 o'clock in the morning, getting up, getting dressed, till 4 o'clock when I knew I was out, unless there was rugby training. And then there's a good chance that something's going to happen at rugby training, you know, that kind of way. So there was just, it was that fear. And then being free of school at the weekends was like, oh, I don't want to forget about that. So you just get as blitzed as you can, you know? So, I mean, that was kind of secondary school. And then by the time you get into your fifth and sixth years, you're kind of really introduced, you know, at the time clubbing was big, you know, and ease were around, and suddenly it was like, now that's me, I'm sorted now, because I just don't have to think at all from a Friday to a Sunday, you know?
And is there, I mean, obviously I'm not trained in any of this, but is there elements of disassociation, like the personality fragmenting to manage? So you can kind of, you know, particularly with drug taking, there is like a disassociation, isn't there? Just to break away from the pain.
For me, it was disassociation for myself.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I never really had, I still don't have a group of friends. I know maybe one or two people that I know from all the way through my life. It was always go with that group, or I'll go with that group, or I'll go with that group. So I think for me, it was always pushing myself, as much of myself away from it, and being, I'll be that guy there and I can be that guy there, you know. And a lot of that comes into people pleasing. I would do a lot of people pleasing. We're all, you know, or we're in relationships or friendships. I'd become the person you want because it's easier for me to construct something that's not real, you know, which is a form of dissociation.
So you're in fifth or sixth year, clubbing is happening. You've obviously not, you know, there was no therapy. You weren't in therapy or anything. You're just trying to get through your school years, and you're now taking ease. How does that feel in your life in that moment? Like, where are you? Are you completely lost? Are you actually kind of happy? Are you,
I was deeply unhappy with who I was. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was this person underneath who had been through that, and that had happened. And that's another thing that I've done, where I've kind of gone, well, that's that now. That's, just put away that. We'll move on. Forget about it. You know, and then you're now this person who was clubbing Rome, but I was always the person who was doing too much. Or, you know, Jesus, Rome, slow down. You know, I was kind of carefree with myself. And because I'd never developed a sense of who I am, or a real sense of self, and go, this is who I am, this is who Rowan is, it was easy just to be many different people, or get away for a week, or to, you know what I mean? So it was kind of carefree abandonment, you know, and really not caring about myself. You know, I didn't really care what would happen. You know, not that I was dangerous or flippant and stuff, you know, but I just didn't have the self-worth to kind of stop myself and go, look, this is really bad for you. This is not working out. You know, I didn't have, I suppose, an anchor point to go back to go, look, you strayed yourself. You know, people kind of go, well, like, you know, I was 16, 17, I was doing really well in school, and then I started drugs and became this person. But then I went back to college and I was like, okay, it's time to knuckle down now. You know, that just never, my life.
There wasn't
never,
a baseline for you to return to. There wasn't a baseline.
No. And it never seemed to plateau either. You know, I'm not saying I was miserable all the time. I was great fun to be around. You know what I mean? You know, I'm very outgoing. I got to college and I was like, okay. I think I've always kind of gone, okay, now I can reinvent myself. You know, leaving school was great to get out. I went to school after the first school and I got bullied really badly for a couple of years. And it was great to leave that and go, okay, now I'm out of that and I'm going to go to college. I'm going to be this person in college and it's going to be great and things are going to happen again. But you just end up, you know, you end up in the same place each time. You know, I'm like, how did I get here? How do I get here? How do I keep ending up in trouble? How do I keep ending up in debt? Why does it always happen to me? And you kind of go, well, yeah, well, there's your basis. So all your life, you're not worth anything. You're worth shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you kind of, I suppose your hindsight is so badly skewed.
Mm.
You know, not having that baseline. Now, I mean, it doesn't mean I wasn't able to operate or wasn't successful. You know, I've always been kind of good at what I put my head to, you know, if I put my head to it. And if I feel, you know, I'm gaining some kind of self-worth, I'm actually good at this. You know, but it was just consistency over a long time was something that was hard for me to manage because I think at the back of my head, I was always just enjoy this now because it's going to go tits up at some stage.
Well, it's also hard to keep water in an empty vessel, isn't it? You know, you can keep pouring in those good things, but when the bottom isn't there, and I've experienced that when, you know, my, like, very different, I haven't gone through what you've gone through, but that like, oh yeah, no, I can do this and but you know, it's gone right out the bottom because there was a deep feeling of, but it's not true, you know? And when that voice is there, you were getting through and doing amazing things. But when that, when the bottom is empty and it's just falling out, I can only imagine.
And I mean, it's not just for people with trauma. There's a lot of people experience, you know, people with very bad depression or anyone who has anything that causes a sense of low self-esteem or worth, you know, you could do good things and you kind of do them for the praise you're getting or to get that feedback because you don't believe it yourself, you know, that way. So it's hard to manifest pride in something that's long lasting or that's real. Actually, I'm good at this because I'm able to do this. You kind of go, I'm good at this because that person said I'm good at this. You know, which is never sustainable.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Where Rowan is now, in after buying a little cottage in the setting, which sounds amazing, on an acre and a half, we're sitting here and we're looking back, and you know, you looked back at our previous conversation and felt you were hiding a kind of a large piece, which is pretty huge. And you spoke of the malignancies and you spoke of the things you really wanted to bring through. You have causation and trauma. What are those links you really want to put out to people so that they can either learn from them or, I don't know, give us your journey a little bit from, we've heard now your awful trauma. I mean, it's brutal. But you are in a well place and you are, you know, you've come through an inordinate amount, you know, highs and lows, peaks and troughs, all of it. And now to a degree, you know, and I'm going to use this term and I don't mean it as it might sound, but face the beast. You've faced this very deep well and huge piece of your life. Could you talk us through that a little bit?
I mean, God, I started seeing doctors before when I was probably 21. Mm-hmm. You know, I was newly married. And again, you know, after a good cycle of a good period of things going well, things just, you know, went dramatically downhill. I was using, I was working a lot. I was working 6-7 days a week and my life was just falling apart. And because I wasn't ready to say to someone, actually, there'd been, you know, this is where I think it is. Or I didn't even know that that's what it was. You know, I didn't know abuse trauma would carry on like this. You know, I always, that was then and this stuff is now, so it's separate from then, you know. So I didn't address or didn't want to address it probably, you know. So I mean, the last 20 years of that have been in and out of hospital for bipolar and drug treatment. Lots and lots of doctors, you know, I kind of say lots of wasted years where I was just stuck in the same cycle of doing well for a period of time. Things would start to slip in my head, you know, and I see them now as not to put, I don't like putting everything back on the trauma. You know, it's not about the incident as such, but it's the mechanisms and modalities and patterns of thought that I have that would repeat themselves, you know. So I just got into this cycle of, you know, kind of settling down, meeting someone great. You know, I was married for 12 years. But again, I just couldn't stop myself from trying to manifest chaos or not dealing with what was really going on and saying, well, I'm just down. Well, just down, what, you know, wasn't really the answer I needed or I needed to tell people, you know. It was, I feel, you know, I'm not talking about how I feel afraid all the time. I'm not talking about that I have nightmares. I'm not talking about that I can't walk into a room of people without either being really loud or being tiny, teeny, or, you know, I wasn't talking about how I'll do a conversation with, so have a conversation with someone. And in my head, I'm at four or five hours down the road thinking that person doesn't like me, or they were making a slight about this, you know. So the journey from then to now has been realistically dealing with symptoms. So I've had the flu for 20 years and all I'm doing is just blowing my nose every now and then to clear the head, but not sitting down and going, I need to stop. I need to, I'm sorry, the analogy, but it's kind of like,
I get what you mean. I think when you say dealing with symptoms really landed with me because everybody's like, yeah, exactly that. Dealing with the symptoms as opposed to going, well, hang on a minute. Where, you know, it's, you know, we mentioned, or you used the word malignancy. And I think that's very powerful as well, because, you know, when you think of a cancer or whatever, you know, people try and get in and get rid of the tumor, you know. And so you've been kind of like, you know, or we've used it before at work, whack-a-mole, like you were doing whack-a-mole with all of these symptoms. I'm not trying to make light of your situation, but I'm just using
people I can talk to and they'll say, you know, apart from that, those times that was utterly crazy and insane, there was also times where you were really good and you were really
funny. Of course.
Do you know that way? So, I mean, I don't look at 20 years wasted, you know. It's, it's taken 20 years or more, whatever it is, to get to this point.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the big thing.
There was no way I could have been ready for it. In many ways, I wasn't. It's a great saying in life, and it's like, humble yourself or life's going to humble you. And I think, you know, whatever that pivot point was 2 years ago, a year and a half ago at this stage, where again, my whole world had crumbled due to my own actions. You know what I mean? I was with someone, I was having affairs, I slipped back using. It's the same fucking pattern, the same cycle, you know? And I think I ended up with a suicide attempt, and I ended up in hospital, and I just ended up kind of going like, I can't go on like this. You know, I can't. So I was just like, here it is. I'm just going to throw the cards on the table and let's see what happens. Cause I was out of options. Mm. You know, I was 100% out of options, you know, and I didn't, whatever it was, it wasn't even, here we are now, let's try again. It was like, well, here's the last of it.
Okay.
There's nothing more to put on the table. So let's see what happens, you know. And it seems to now, and I'm still very, very early on in it, you know, but it seems to have just been the key, you know. Certainly my doctor was like, this is something we've thought, but now this all makes sense. And once I kind of accepted the effect and read more into trauma and CPTSD, which is, I don't want to label anything, but sorry, dogs are going there. it just made so much sense. Mm. You know, when someone sits you down and goes, well, no, you're not a bad person. You didn't intentionally hurt these people. This is your mode of thinking. This is what happened. And this is because of this. And I suppose actively creating those links back to something that I went, that was then, you know, has made all the difference. Made all the difference.
And can you remember, and I'm not trying to, you know, look for anything, you know, I'm not trying to be sensational, but like, can you remember the feeling of, maybe the feeling is the wrong word, but can you remember what it was like to say it out? Like when you said that in the hospital, I had this feeling of
I couldn't say it. Okay. I wasn't able to physically form the words.
Mm.
I couldn't physically say, I wouldn't be able to have this conversation where I would probably get to the point of I'm abused, and then literally my throat would close. It's quite scary. I physically couldn't talk about it, so I just wrote it.
Okay.
You know, and then I wrote it, and then I sat with someone, and then I read it out in a group, and then it kind of went away for a bit. I didn't do it, but it just came flooding. Once I even committed it to paper, you know, that was the gate was open then, you know, that way.
Like when you say it, and I could, you know, this is me picking up here, but like it feels, you know, because we've looked at you, that we've been playing whack-a-mole or symptoms, managing symptoms. And now to finally get to this, let's call it what it is, root cause, you know, root fucking cause. Like I immediately felt, it was almost like I had this picture of somebody, you know, it's like that final vomit that you've actually gotten the thing out. So while it's traumatic and it's awful, strange. it's feeling better.
I wouldn't know, to be honest with you. I wouldn't say I felt better. I'd say it was suddenly realizing, fuck, I need now to go and deal with this stuff.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It was kind of like I once compared it. Sorry, I'm always using analogies or similes, whichever one they are. Of sitting on a beach with a load of stones, and you're kind of going, that's there, and he belongs there, and he belongs there. And then suddenly you're looking at the beach, the whole beach, and going, fuck, I actually have to go to get through all this now. Okay. This is now, this door is opened, and now this box is spewing forth, and I need now how do I control this? You know, and then suddenly a lot of emotion and pain and anger and upset and shame, you know, it all comes bundling out because it's all wrapped up in one.
Mm.
You know, you can't really deal with some of them. You know, certainly when you're talking about it, it's embarrassing to talk about.
Mm.
You know, there's still shame. There's still stigma. I mean, there's still instances I've not talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, I'm not ready to go deep into that shit. You know, I've done a type of therapy called EMDR where your brain actually stores stuff away. It goes, I can't deal with that now, so we're not going to deal with that. It's a type of therapy whereby you connect. Now you go back into the instance and you run it over a couple more times out loud. And as you're doing it, you're kind of connecting with your body, and it actually tricks the brain into processing stuff it hasn't processed. It's very interesting. And it suited me, and it worked as a modality.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, to your question, I wouldn't say I felt better.
Mm.
I think you feel relieved.
Mm-hmm.
You feel a little unburdened.
Okay.
But for me, then I had the scope and the enormity of doing that at 45, and then looking back at the effect it has had on my life and the effect that it's had on people around me and my work and my wider circle. Do you know what I mean? And you go through a lot of stages. You go through obviously deep, deep, deep upset.
Mm.
And there's that initial release where you can't talk. And then there's a huge period of anger, which I'd still go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, fuck's sakes, a ruined marriage, ruined friendships, ruined careers. You know, there's a lot of ruination about it. And that's not to kick myself about it. You know, to a certain extent, I have forgiven myself. But it's sometimes you kind of swing between, well, that was a wasted life because of what those fucking bricks did to me, which is hard to carry sometimes. You know, that'd be weighty. Not that I want justice, and you know, I don't really care about them anymore. It's really sad. It's really sad.
You were just a little boy.
Probably. Yeah. Well, it's a grief. It's grieving.
It is grieving. We're both crying now, but it is grieving. And I hear you talking about the ruined marriages and ruined friendships, but all I keep thinking of is, but what about the little boy? You know,
well,
I mean,
I spent years doing a lot of addiction work and a lot of, you know, mental health management work where it's all about personal responsibility and ownership.
Hmm.
And stuff like that, you know, and I've never wanted to, even with my mental health, I've never wanted to go, well, that's because I'm bipolar, but that's because of that. So that excuses that, because it doesn't, you know. It's more a grief of, God, I wish I'd done something about this and know what I know now years ago, and that wouldn't have happened, you know.
And for anyone who might be listening, who is either suffering with symptoms, whack-a-mole stories, using, what could you say to them? I don't know, what is there anything, like, I mean, I think obviously even hearing you speak is huge. It's massive. And I would hope, and you know, it might resonate with somebody, but you've come through that fear. You've come through that.
Well,
you know,
I'm going through it.
Mm.
No, I don't think, you know, I mean, I asked my trauma psychologist when I started the program, I was like, so this is a 6-month program. Then what happened? She's like, no, she goes, this is your life. You know, we can't change that. This is, you know, it's years and years and years. And that's not an oh, poor me thing, but it is just learning, relearning skills and stuff. I suppose, God, someone's, you know, it's a hard question.
Mm.
Fair play to you for getting to hear.
Yeah.
That's brave. It's brave. It's brave to even listen to someone talk about it. It's something I could never do.
Mm.
You know? Fair play for you if you're managing to get through day-to-day life without it absolutely crushing you or destroying you. Fair play, you're a fucking brave and you're a strong person, stronger than me. You know, because I wasn't strong enough to face up to it for a long, 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 long time. I'm still not strong enough today. I mean, I have days where it's just absolutely terrible. I mean, I've prepared myself for this conversation because we've talked about what we are going to do, you know. But I would say it is a huge amount of power to be gained back in making yourself hurt in whatever way you can.
Yeah.
In whatever way you can. And it's not easy, and you will be judged, and you won't be believed, and you won't feel your hurt at times, you know. But it only takes a small little click of people to turn around to you and listen to you with empathy that can change your outlook on the world, because not everyone's bad. And you know, there is trust and there is good to be had in the world, and you deserve it. We all do. You know?
And are you able to, you know, they're beautiful words, and I think that's why it's important to come from you, because of this, your lived experience. And I think that's very powerful thing to say, that, yeah, well done, you know, for even listening, or you've made it this far, kind of thing. Are you able to turn that on for yourself as well? Are you able to, you know, with the work that you're doing?
In bits and pieces. It's like anything, it's a practice.
Yeah.
It's catching yourself. You know, there's days where, you know, I went through a bit of a down period recently where I was just, for no particular reason, I don't know what set it off or what caused it. But it was, you know, a very bad depressive episode where I was like, I actually, not that I didn't want to be here, but I just didn't want to engage in life at all. I was not washing, you know, I was at home, I was isolating, and I wasn't talking. For me, it's really important to be talking and moving towards something, no matter how slow that is.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how slow that is. And some days I can do things like this, where it's great, you know, and I'm able to talk, I feel safe. Do you know what I mean? It's something we spoke about together, you know. It's space I came to you and said, I'd like to do this about this, and you're like, how do you feel? And, you know, it creates a safe space. Some days I don't have the ability to make myself feel safe, and that can manifest in different ways. I'll purposely stay away from, I'll either cut myself off entirely I'll see that, okay, you're not doing well today. You're just reach out and tell someone, you know, and I'll say, I'm not doing well today. Or, are you okay? And there's other days where that's self-critically bad. And I'll say, I'm too toxic to talk to anyone today.
Okay.
Because anyone I talk to, I'm going to spit venom on them. And it's not going to be a good communication, you know. And those days are getting less.
Okay.
You know? So it kind of swings between I don't trust the world to I don't trust myself in the world, you know. And that's something that I still need to work on, you know. And you know, I'm by no means at the end of the road at all with this. You know, today's a good day. Tomorrow might not be. You know, I still get very bad nightmares. I still get when I say malignant, it can trauma or this, you know, and I don't just mean the trauma of the abuse. I mean the trauma of addiction, the trauma of mental health issues. Mm. You know, it's all compounding into one.
Mm.
And it's important that I don't go, well, there's that and that and that, you know. But it's malignant in that it can manifest itself in a million little different ways, and I don't think. Whereas before I talked about that beach and I can never get over this mountain, I don't look at it like that anymore. I look at it in, oh, why are you angry with the toaster? You're not angry with the toaster. What's going on here? And I can catch myself, you know, and it sounds kind of funny, but I can get that angry with the toaster, you know, that I'll smash the toaster at times, you know. That person resides in me, you know. I have the ability to lie. I have the ability to manipulate situations to make them safe for me or chaotic for me. I have the ability to be very, very good and be a really good person. I also have the ability to be a really helpful person. I have the ability to talk to myself terribly sometimes. You know, all of these things are within me. Any one moment they come up, and it's kind of whack-a-mole, you know. But the stakes are slightly lower now. You know, the stakes are about me having a good day and me catching stuff and go, hold on now, that's because of that. And that's been the learning. You know, and that's been hindsight, because I can only relate it to past experiences where I kind of go, well, that's because of that. You know,
and while,
does that make sense to you? Sorry.
Yes, absolutely. Of course it makes sense. And I'm visualizing the, I also work in analogies, and I'm a visual thinker, visual learner. I'm picturing this beach, and I suppose while there's a lot ahead and maybe, you know, more stones to uncover, because we're constantly evolving, we're constantly learning, we're constantly opening another door going, oh, for fuck's sake, there's another cupboard with more stuff in it.
Yeah, yeah. I talk about it hitting rock bottom, and you go, I've hit rock bottom, and you go, hey, there's a trapdoor here.
Shit, what do you mean? I also have the picture of you, you know, if we were to pan out from that beach, let's stay in visual mode. If we were to pan out from that beach, of how far you've come down that beach.
Yeah.
You know, is another way to look at, like, you have come, you
it
know,
is.
That there is more ahead, but you, Jesus, you've come a long way.
Yeah. And again, that's the duality of it.
Yeah.
You know, the yin and yang is where I, you know, some days I'll come and go, fuck me, I'm a fucking, I've survived a lot. I've gotten through a lot. Still here, you know. I mean, look, I've been dead three times, you know, clinically dead.
Really?
You know, and that's not, yeah, and that's not a, you know, it's not a hierarchy of shit that's happened. But I mean, I've managed to get to this place. Thanks be to God, you know, and it's slowly making me a better person. And the more, it's constant work. But sorry, to your point, the panning out, sometimes that can be really good and empowering. Other times it's overwhelming and I have to close focus again. Do you know that way?
So yeah, yeah.
I definitely take your point. And yeah, it is. It's good. Sometimes it is. It's nice to pan back and go, okay, you've been through this before. You've gotten through this. Or you're doing pretty well, you know. The fact that I could be here now talking to you.
Absolutely.
About this, 3 years ago, I would, when I say I physically couldn't form the words, you know, I sat with psychiatrists going, physically not being able to say the words, you know, so that's, it's huge, you know.
It
it's
is.
Huge.
It's really massive. It really is.
But that can be overwhelming at times
of
as well.
Of course.
I can kind of go, you know, and sometimes it'll you'd be like, oh, I'm just fucking exhausted by this. You know, I don't deserve this weight. This is too much. And they're the times that the skills I've learned in the last year really kick in.
Yeah.
Where I go back to those old modalities of dealing with stuff, you know, where I'll actually say to someone, I'm actually feeling really unsafe and not well today. So I'll talk to you later on. Or I can, you know, I'll say that to someone. You know, I'm feeling really bad. I'm feeling really angry. It's best we don't talk later on. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I can say that now. Whereas before I would have went, here's a way now I can get rid of that feeling. I'll go in and manifest an argument here and I'll be an asshole, you know, and I'm on my bad days. That's how bad the bad days are. On my good days, you know, and also I try to think about it all the time.
Of course.
I can't live, you know, I don't like the labels.
No.
You know, as much as I've always been very open about my mental health, I don't want it to define me.
But you have to get on with living, you know. We have to get on with living, and you've got your dogs there and a house to move into.
And look, Jesus Christ, beautiful children. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, for all our own personal differences, my ex-wife is an absolutely incredible mother. I'm so lucky. You know, she's brilliant. I can't fault her. She raised those kids pretty well. I've got to do all the things I wanted to do, you know. I went to college, I had a laugh, I had the full-on college experience. I got into music. I wanted to be a technician. I wanted to be a production manager. I got to be, you know, and yes, there was obviously disasters along the way, but you know, I've done pretty good. You know.
Yeah, you have. And I think that's the pan out I was trying to give, because whatever it is in our brains, in human brains, we focus on the one thing that we cocked up on that day or that week or that month, as opposed to, well, hang on a minute, you know, you did this other stuff, you were kind to the dog, you were, you have beautiful children, you made that person smile down the road, you know, you've got to take the small wins.
Well, it's definitely a little win scenario, you know, and that's what I'm saying, where that pan out can be your best friend or not. Sometimes panning out.
It's like, oh, I don't want to see that.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of I'm ready for my close-up.
Let's narrow the picture again.
See my ears and my shitty jeans. Put back in close and my one good eye.
Of course, yeah, I know what you mean. And look, I think it's massive, and I know a part of you does as well, and you can give yourself a high five, Mel Robbins style, and you can do all of those things. And then, of course, there's the all the other stuff that has to come with you as well. But having a hindsight on your hindsight and coming back, I think, was really honest, really brave. It's what this is all about. You felt in a place to talk about it, and that's, you know, that's pretty amazing, really.
Thank you for having me back on and, you know, to a certain extent, allowing me to do it. I go by my gut a lot nowadays, you know, whereas, and I don't mean my gut, like my head, I don't trust my head. My head is not
intuition.
Rational.
Yeah.
My head is not sane. My head will do anything to trick me into being comfortable or denying something. Yeah, no, thank you. It was important for me to do it.
Well, I could hear that from you. And for me then, of course, yes. Like, of course, we go back, we redo or we add on. And I just hope, you know, I suppose what I want to say to you is many things. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you, Jenny.
I don't feel pity for you or sad. No. I'm really proud that no matter what, you are willing to work at going forward and you want to learn. And that is not always an easy thing to do, because to take on the shitty parts of yourself is like, oh, fucking, you know, they're weighty enough in any life. Never mind the trauma that you've had to deal with. And you have had to deal with that. That's very, very big, Rowan. It really is. So that gentle moving forward and, you know, being here today, I'm really proud of you. And I think it's, you know, you have a long beach walk ahead. We all do. But you are walking with more correct supports. You're not, you know, do you know what I mean? You're using better tools. You're picking up better. Your bag is packed differently.
Yeah.
And that's the...
It's the narrative or the genre of this podcast kind of egged it on. Do you know, the position I named couldn't be attained without hindsight, and sometimes the hindsight is someone else going, you need to look at this now, or you do need to look back. You know, that's what brought me to here, was going, I need to open this, I need to look back, I need to look into this and see how it is and see how it plays out, and what it is looking back to go forward.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And come find me over in Hindsight Conversations on Twitter and Instagram.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.